Today on Doomed! The racist boomer energy memes are coming from inside the White House. On today's episode of Doomed with Matt Binder, tech reporter at the Daily Beast, Will Sommer will join the show to take us inside Trump's social media summit at the White House, which took place last Thursday. Who was there? Who wasn't? Who was uninvited? All that and much, much more on today's episode of Doomed. Oh boy, what a day to do this episode. Let's pull up Will and myself up on the YouTube stream so you can see us. What a day to do this episode. My God. All right, there we go. Will, thank you for joining us.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So right before we went live, we're talking really quickly, and we're like saying to ourselves, I'm sorry if to put words in your mouth, but I was saying to myself, holy shit, this Trump rally is probably the worst of all the Trump rallies, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think we're seeing people compare this night's, Wednesday night's rally to, you know, I mean, it's some of the craziest speeches basically since he started running in 2015.
Right, right. And so just, I guess, in case you're just tuning in and you have a life out like when you leave work and haven't been paying attention to news and politics. So Trump is doing one of his rallies in North Carolina, and he brings up Ilhan Omar, who literally just an hour or two before, he started for the first time mentioning this far right-wing conspiracy to the media that Ilhan Omar married her brother or some insane conspiracy that's obviously not true. And there's no factual backing to lay any sort of credibility to this claim. It's just something that has been laying out there for months, maybe even a year now in the right-wing internet sphere. And he mentioned it to the media. And he brings her up at the rally, and the people there start chanting. They start chanting, "Send her back." And I believe you said there was even more.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, I think the big moment here, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're concerned about the state of the country and the Trump presidency, is this "send her back" moment. Because obviously this is like lock her up on steroids. I mean, this is, you know, I think, you know, if you've been kind of shocked about, you know, how the past sort of week has gone in terms of Trump seeming to take, you know, his racism to the next level and the Republicans not doing anything about it. You know, I think this send her back thing is really kind of a very disturbing capper to all that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the whole, lock her up thing, because I have seen people compare it to that. And you said it. And I agree that this is another level. I mean, you have to bring it up because it's the most obvious, like, mirror image of something Trump's done previously. But it's clearly so far beyond. Like, it's one thing for, you know, the lock her up thing is messed up on many levels. But we're adding a whole new level of racism, xenophobia, anti-immigrant fervor with this send her back thing. Christ, it's bad.
Yeah, it is really bad. I mean, I feel like I think what's disturbing about like a lot of what we've seen over the past few days is this idea that like American citizenship for immigrants, particularly for brown people and people of color, is somehow revocable. And that also, like, they have to be perpetually, like, really positive about the state of the country and basically can't participate in politics. So, I mean, it certainly sent her back. I mean, it's just disturbing stuff.
Now, I also believe I saw that they were chanting, like, traitor and other treason. And I mean, really now. It is to a point, I think, where I don't want to get too into what's going on in the background of all this with the Democratic, the House leadership, the Democrats sort of feuding with Ilhan Omar and the rest of the squad, AOC, Presley, Tlaib. I don't want to bring that up right now. We have so much more to get into. But, you know, it is kind of amazing that, like, all that was happening. And it's like this Trump thing is now, like, the line is drawn now. Like, pick a side. Like, you either stand with them or you're even if you are anti-Trump, if you're not standing with them at this point, you are aiding and abetting this sort of language that's coming out of the Trump campaign really now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I feel like constantly, and there's certainly moments like the past week where, you know, Trump or his supporters take it to another level. And then the question is, are Republicans going to do anything about it? And, you know, that was even like with the vote yesterday. And now I think this chant goes even further than that. Are they going to do anything? Almost certainly not, right?
Right. It's, you know, I almost get, I mean, obviously doing what we do, we ask almost rhetorically. But it almost it makes me really angry when, like, there's Democrats out there who, you know, politicians I'm talking about, not like rank and file, but who really think that maybe this will be the time. Like, this is way beyond even like before Trump even, like, they were beyond this then. Like, there's no going back. There's no denouncing this. Like, Trump is the monster that they've created, and Trump himself has created monsters within his rank and file that, like, it's almost, yeah, let's segue now before I get too off, because I'm really getting angry about this center back thing. I don't want to get too off the topic, but let's segue into this now. You know, Trump has created monsters with this QAnon thing, even though he's never really technically brought it up. And I really do think we've lost an entire generation of people who, it's like they really did join a cult. Like, there's no coming back from this. I really don't think these people who believe in this QAnon thing so strongly are ever coming back. And as you mentioned earlier, there was apparently a moment, and I'd like you to explain, there was a moment at the rally earlier involving QAnon as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny you mentioned cult because, you know, there was just a story about how just in the way that cults, you know, force you to separate yourself from family members and stuff. You know, there was just a story about how all these people essentially have lost their relatives to QAnon because they, you know, they've just lost their minds. But in this case, at this rally, the thing to understand going into this is that QAnon people are obsessed with Trump somehow confirming that QAnon's real, right? So whenever he uses the number 17, which is the letter alphabet for Q, they're like, oh, it's happening. So in this case, during the rally, someone's held up a baby with a Q onesie, and Trump goes, essentially paraphrasing, he's like, wow, what a beautiful baby. The media is going to say that baby's fake. Well, you know, for QAnon people, that's all they need. I mean, they've gone, you know, already Q, the mystery poster behind QAnon, has, like, recognized this baby as QAnon baby. And it's, I mean, in a way, Trump here, I suspect inadvertently, is going to breathe a lot more new life into QAnon, I think, after tonight.
Excuse me. Now, earlier today, there was a poll that came out. Let me pull this up here. Because this poll is, I don't, I feel like I so often just fall back on the term, this is, whatever it is, blank, is shocking to me. But really, I'm never shocked. It's more like just like a feeling of, I guess it should be shocking, but it's not anymore, really. This poll is stunning, the one that came out today from Huffington Post and YouGov. They apparently asked, and I don't have the whole poll in front of me, so I don't know exactly how many people were asked and who they, you know, how they determined who to ask. But this poll is basically a poll of Americans, broad Americans, broadly American people. And it's, they ask if they're asking these people, is the earth flat? Are vaccines shown to cause autism? Is Pizzagate real? And was President Obama born in Kenya? And, well, I guess we can feel strongly that only 10% of people believe that it either definitely is true or probably true that the Earth is flat, which to me is still a shockingly high number, but maybe only 10%. something like, what is this? 35% of people believe in Pizzagate still.
Yeah, I mean, and so then let's say, you know, depending on the poll's demographics, let's say, you know, what percentage of that is the Republican Party, or like, you know, and then you're looking at maybe more than half of the Republican Party believing in Pizzagate.
Right, right. And I almost wonder, because the way they, they even described it for people, like, you can't even say, oh, maybe they don't know what Pizzagate is. Sort of like, you know, when you see polling where it's like, how do Americans feel about Bernie Sanders? They like him. How do Americans feel about voting for a socialist? They would never. So it's like sort of a disconnect in terms of like what they perceive as the word liberal or what they perceive as the word socialist. It doesn't mean the same thing for everybody. But this poll pretty strongly described to them what Pizzagate is. Leaked email from some of Hillary Clinton's campaign staffers contained code words for pedophilia, human trafficking, and satanic spiritual abuse, what some people refer to as Pizzagate.
Yeah, and people are like, yeah, that sounds good to me.
And, you know, this is what QAnon transformed. Like, this is where QAnon came from.
Right. I mean, yeah, QAnon is kind of like a mega Pizzagate. I think it's an easy way to describe it. And it sort of has sucked in just all sorts of conspiracy theories, whether it's the JFK assassination, 9/11, truther stuff. But it's interesting, you know, speaking of polls, last year the Post polled on people's beliefs in QAnon. And the takeaway from the poll is, oh, it's not that popular. But then you look at it, and it was something like 20% of the population. And, you know, it's like, that's not, or maybe 20% of the Republican Party. And it was like, well, that's not good.
Right. I don't think people really put it in perspective. Like the Halley's Comet people were like 12 people, or maybe I'm being, maybe it was like more like 25 or 50, who knows. But my point is, it was a very small amount of people, yet it's a world famous cult.
Exactly.
Jim Jones, Jonestown. A lot of people, but when you look at the videos and the movies and documentaries about it, but overall, you know, fairly small. I don't even know if it would hit 1% of the population.
Yeah, like a couple hundred people, yeah.
Yeah, this is a huge amount of people who believe in something that is even less real than the Halley's Comet and the, like, because there's nothing even physical there. Like, you could at least say those cults, they met each other constantly, they lived together, they moved their whole lives. Like, this was something where they were, you know, 24/7, this is who they were. They left their jobs, their families. The QAnon thing, it's like, these people are your neighbors. They work with you. It's, how are they interacting with normal, everyday people, yet still so far gone in this cult?
I mean, it is really hard to imagine, and yet you hear these things, or, you know, when I've interacted with them, you know, they're sort of, they act like otherwise normal people, but then they'll just be like, well, of course, you know, why are you voting for Trump? Well, because Hillary Clinton needs babies, right? You know, and they just treat it like you would say, because I want lower taxes, like they believe it.
Now, the Jeffrey Epstein thing has been really interesting to me. The way, you know, he's been in the news because, I guess, his time has finally come after decades of getting away with this stuff, which this stuff, I mean, pedophilia and sex trafficking of teenagers and minors. But it's amazing to see how they twist and turn these things into a positive for Trump and QAnon. And what makes me bring this up now, because I've talked about this so much on this show. You've been on this show numerous times to update us on QAnon. Just today, a journalist for Playboy, doing better journal. And I don't mean this to knock Playboy, but doing the job that other mainstream journalist outfits like CNN, New York Times, and Washington Post should be doing, literally screams at Trump to, hey, did you know what was going on with Epstein? Were you ever there when he was with these girls? And he apparently just points up at the sky, says something like, oh, look at the weather, and walks off. And the Playboy journalist tweets this out, and I see in his replies numerous QAnon people saying, wow, you guys just don't get it. He was pointing up at the storm. And I'm just like, oh my God, what is going on here? Like, how far gone are we where they literally are taking even like things like that? It's just, I don't even, and that's why I say, I think we've lost a generation of people. I think like there's a significant number of boomers out there who will go to their grave believing all this stuff is true, no matter how many more presidents they live to see.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, if Trump loses in 2020 or if the Republican loses in 2024, I think they'll just be like, well, you know, this was all a deep state plot, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's funny you talk about Trump and Epstein. You know, even beyond QAnon people, there's so much like obviously Bill Clinton was buddies with this guy. Trump was as well. But, you know, they're very deep into Clinton's connections, but they really either ignore Trump's friendship with him or, interestingly, they've come up with this theory that Trump was doing like a undercover boss type thing to like take down Epstein. Right. So there was this like really well-produced graphic that was like, number one, like Trump befriends Epstein to get inside the operation. And then going all the way to like Trump appoints Alex Acosta, Secretary of Labor, to draw attention to Epstein. Like, I know, go get his buddy in, and that'll make everyone talk about it.
Right. It's not like Donald Trump was for decades a very famous media mogul, real estate mogul, plus media mogul, really, who had every major outlet at his beck and call and could have easily basically called out someone like this very easily, like really very easily. Like Trump could have probably went like that with his fingers and had cameras outside this guy's home if he said, hey, this guy is doing this.
You're right, that he has to do this whole, like, subterfuge operation. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Right. Like, Trump was able to buy out a New York Times ad to get the Central Park Five, but this Jeffrey Epstein...
That's a good point.
Yeah, but this Jeffrey Epstein, he had to really play the long game with, you know? Now, yeah, I don't even know what to say anymore about this, but QAnon... Our discussion about QAnon doesn't end there, because you went to the Trump White House social media summit last week.
Right.
And you were there and you saw it all, and there were a number of QAnon personalities there. And I mean, I guess really just why not take us there? Bring us on this journey with you from the moment you step in the White House and see those giant blown up printed out tweets.
Yeah, so I mean, really, I think setting the stage was that this was sort of like almost like the prom for the pro-Trump internet, right? And everyone wanted an invite, and if you were in, you were cool, and that meant Trump was kind of giving you a pat on the back. And, you know, some of these people are more or less anonymous posters on the Donald Trump subreddit. So, I mean, these are the guys who are not already public figures, and so everyone wanted in. Interestingly, you know, this thing was, I think it functioned in a couple ways, but one of them was to, you know, kind of drum up these complaints about social media censorship. But interestingly, he didn't invite anyone who's really been banned, because those people would be too much of a scandal for his White House. So he didn't invite like Milo Yiannopoulos, Laura Loomer, Gavin McGinnis of the Proud Boys. So there was a lot of drama on that side about who didn't get invited. And then, of course, they invite Ben Garrison, the famous pro-Trump cartoonist. And then someone points out his anti-Semitism, and so he doesn't get invited, so there's drama around that. So I get to the White House, and, you know, everyone's waiting to go to the social media summit. Now, unfortunately, at the last moment, they said it was closed to the press, even though Trump had tweeted, the fake news will be invited in. You know, I wanted to say, you know, look at this tweet, let me in. So, of course, I watched it, and it was very surreal. I mean, you know, the show starts with Kellyanne Conway interviewing Diamond and Silk, famous pro-Trump YouTube commenters. And then, you know, from there, Trump gets up and he says, you know, thanks for coming. And, you know, it's unbelievable the crap you people think of. So, you know, they're all cheering. You know, you got James O'Keefe there. You got Don Jr. there. It was really, really the whole gang.
Now, I have a list of some of the names in front of me. And I want to talk a little bit about some of these guys in particular. Some these people, I've probably mentioned nearly all of these people on the show at some point. But I want to get a little, in fact, one person I haven't mentioned on this show, and let's get to him first, is, and because I think you have a little bit of history with this guy,
yes.
Carpe Donctum. Now, let's first, before, he actually made a little bit of separate news later earlier this week after the summit, but let's first, I guess, tell us a little bit about who this guy is. I mean, I'm assuming that Carpe Donctum is obviously his legal real name.
So, you know, this is a guy, he's this guy from the Midwest, but as you say, right now he's only sort of publicly known by he's a self-described meme smith. So he does these videos where, and I gotta say, kind of what passes for like the cream of the crop Trump memes, like it's not that great. I mean, so this guy's had his videos tweeted out by Trump, and his videos will be like, you know, Joe Biden sneaking up on Joe Biden. So it's like, Joe Biden's a creep. You know, it'll be Trump's going to run for president forever or whatever. And so this guy is kind of the premier meme smith. And so Trump invited him. But this guy, he's very like, he insists on going, as you mentioned, the whole drama is around his name, is that this is a guy who's been to the White House twice now. We know his face. He's a public figure. I mean, he's basically meeting with the administration to discuss campaign plans. And yet, he insists on being referred to as Carpe Donctum. He won't reveal his real name. It's really obvious what his real name is. You know, I have not confirmed this, but it's very easy to find online. And the big news was that BuzzFeed was going to write a story mentioning, first of all, that he had used an alias on One America.
You know his real name?
I will say I haven't confirmed it. I think it's like, I think if you would, like, you know, it's pretty easy to find.
You sure you don't want to break a little news on the show?
I think I would have to do a little more research. But
no, I get it.
This is a guy who, as far as I, you know, the way he described it in terms of the BuzzFeed story, I mean, he has a Facebook page with his real name. Like, it's not a big secret.
Right.
So he...
What was really, I'm sorry not to interrupt you, but it was really shocking to me was I thought, like, when this whole thing happened, I was like, oh, I guess the guy's first time showing his face is at the White House. And then I looked further into it, and the guy literally, full body photos, close up of his face, he's been using his real, like, visual identity this whole time. That's like the complete opposite of anonymous.
No, that's exactly right. And it's this crazy thing where, on the right, especially, they have, like, reduced... Because, like, when you think of doxing, basically before the Trump campaign, and before, like, drama over Gawker and stuff, that meant, like, information people could use to harass you with, like, so like your phone number, your address, maybe your job. But like there's this whole movement that, like, basically if someone does something on the internet, they should never be identified even by their name. And so this is a guy who, again, is going to the White House, he's out in public, and then BuzzFeed goes, so he used an alias on One America News, I think his name was Dennis Charles, and it was kind of crazy that they just let him use an alias without ever saying it was an alias. And so BuzzFeed said, well, look, like, we know your real name, so we're going to mention what it is in this story. And he goes crazy. And eventually BuzzFeed doesn't do it. It seems like Huffington Post is going to run a story either later this week or next week about it. Because, you know, and there was a certain irony here, as you mentioned, because a couple weeks ago he got mad at the Daily Beast for a story. And he said, you know, well, maybe I'll just post Will Summers' phone number, which he has because I've talked to him before. And, you know, so the idea that this guy is like the patron saint of anti-doxing, you know, right. and that he's kind of making these threats about, you know, saying, you know, he didn't do it, but he was essentially saying, you know, like, I could, you know, if you piss me off, essentially. So, I mean, it's absurd.
Right. Now, it is stunning to me. I mean, again, here I go to saying that when I know it's not stunning to me. It's But if this was, for example, someone meeting with Obama.
Sure.
When he was president, it would have been a rallying cry on the right that we deserve to know who went to the White House to meet with the president of the United States. Like, that's really the crux of it there. Like, that's the most hypocritical thing about this. And, you know, a lot of times I could even say, the establishment Democratic rank and file will be the same way the other way around. But no, I think this is actually one of those very clear-cut things where it's like normal people, which a lot of Democrats tend to be, realize that if you go to the White House very specifically from an invite from the President of the United States, meet him at an event, have a one-on-one with the guy, and you go, your name should be out there for people to know who the president met with. And if continue, please.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, the obvious comparison here is how Obama had the White House visitor logs public, right? And like, all these, like, Obama detractors would comb through it, and they would see a guy with a name like William Ayers, and they'd say Obama was meeting with Bill Ayers in the White House, but it's just another guy with a similar name. You know,
right.
They would do this stuff.
But that's it, though. That's what I think is what they don't get. Like, they think we want his name so we can look him up, find out his wife's name, his kid's name, where they go to school, where he lives, where he works. We want to know. No, the reason to have his name out there is because, hey, maybe people who know him in real life know something unsavory about him that would be problematic for the president of the United States to be meeting with this guy for. And they won't know a carpe dunctum, but they know this guy's name and they'll hear his name and they'll go, hey, that guy did such and such. I think it's pretty bad the president met with him.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, it's just frankly ridiculous for the press to have to refer to someone by their screen name, even though they're clearly a character.
Right.
And that, like, I mean, you know, and it also, I will say, I think makes it harder for the general public to keep track of this idea that the president is meeting with these meme makers, because it sounds so ridiculous when you say, like, well, his name is Carpe Donctum and his best friend is named Mad Liberals and all this. Like, you know, I mean, it essentially makes it, and this is like part of the whole game, right? Is, you know, it would be like, like people, when they would write about this summit, the Republicans would say, oh, they're so mad about memes. And it's like, well, it wasn't our idea to have the summit. You know, it's just a thing that Trump's right. doing. You know, shouldn't we talk about it? So apparently that's coming out. But it's this interesting thing. And that actually dovetails in with what you were talking about with the signs at the social media rally. So at the summit. So they had all these signs up that were like, the various crimes of the internet. And so it was like shadow banning. And then they had one for doxing, and they claimed that, you know, this was all the internet lingo that they were kind of trying to get on the same page about.
Right, right. It's, you know, like you mentioned earlier, their memes are pretty bad. They're like I said in the intro, it's boomer level memes. Like, you know the audience they're going for because they know Trump's audience. I mean, that's the type of memes they're making. They're making stuff that, you know, your parents and grandparents, depending on how old you are, share online.
It's a very like it's like take a clip from Indiana Jones and like edit Trump's face on it, and then it's like they're like and make like the Boulder CNN.
right, and he shares them. That's really what, like, that's another thing. I don't really think we mentioned that as the extra layer there. This again isn't like, you know, someone's just creating memes because they're a Trump fan and went to the White House because he's a fan of the president. Like, the president literally uses his work as propaganda for himself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's like a Trump ally, you know? And so, you know, the idea that, I think I made my point on this, but basically it's just absurd that, like, this idea, you know, what I thought was, if he really wanted to keep his identity hidden, he should have had to show up to the White House in, like, a mask or something, you know?
Right.
Like, add some spice to the proceedings.
Right. Now, how mad is Mad Liberals that, that Carpe Donctum stole his meme energy this week?
Yeah, certainly I would say Carpe Donctum is the better known of the pair. I had honestly never heard of Mad Liberals until he was invited along with Carpe Donctum. And I should note, these guys went to the White House twice in the past week, because they also went either one of the days around July 4th. So, you know, they're getting like the red carpet treatment in terms of the White House.
I mean, they're definitely talking to him about... Again, this is speculation, but if you're meeting with the president this much and your job is to make memes, which we all know the president has already shared, he's definitely like giving them his two cents on what he think would be a great next meme or something. You know what I mean?
Well, supposedly when they came in, I think Trump said this about Carpe Donctum. He supposedly said, like, there's the genius, which, I mean, it's just...
So let's move on to this next guy. Now, speaking of QAnon, Bill Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
He was there, and was this his first time meeting Trump? He, by far, is probably the biggest Trump fan on the planet. I've never, like, this is the guy, you've probably seen him online if you're not familiar with him by name. He's got, like, the plastic face, the crazy smile, the white hair. He looks like a literal, like robotic character, like an android type character. From a movie, like, I don't know, Max Headroom or something. And he really does believe Trump could do no wrong. He wasn't originally a QAnon guy, I don't think. But then he became a QAnon guy. But it doesn't matter, really, because he's right in there with him from the beginning as someone who was able to always twist everything into a pro for Trump. Just like the QAnon people do.
I mean, his whole, he was sort of one of the original, like, Trump internet diehards. And so his whole thing was, like, basically the reason he's famous is because he would get really combative with reporters and other people about polls during 2016. Now, he would claim that he was vindicated, that Trump, you know, I mean, Trump did win, as he predicted. Of course, his claims were, like, basically Trump would, like, sweep the Electoral College. Like, maybe Hillary Clinton would win California. But that was, like, he was just every poll. He was kind of like the unskew the polls guy, where he was like, you know, these polls are so biased, whatever. And so now he has an internet radio show, and he's kind of like, in terms of like where he settles in the Trump base or his Trump personalities, I would say he's kind of like one of the kings of the boomers, basically. I mean, so like he gets made fun of a lot by like the 4chan people, but basically he has a radio show and online. And so, of course, it's probably only natural, right, that he would get into QAnon based on that demographic.
Right. Now, funny story. I believe the show is based in Turkey. I did a show on the Google video that James O'Keefe and Project Veritas put out. They had asked me to come on the show, and they invite me and tell me that I'll be on the show with Bill Mitchell. And I have not seen the clip yet. I have not seen if they posted it. I'll look and I'll put it up for people who are watching if you're interested. But he went on about how, you know, the conservative idea here that Google, Twitter, et cetera, are out to conspire and censor conservatives. And I'm sure that was a major topic at the social media summit. And you know, I said to him, you are here with more social media followers than me. You have 400,000 plus followers on Twitter. Your tweets get tons of engagement. They get less engagement than they did in 2016, like you said, because that was an election year and people are just less into politics on off years. So they're not retweeting or maybe seeing it as much. That's not conservative censorship. The idea that you think it is ludicrous. And unfortunately, the other guy on the show I don't know if you're familiar with this guy. He is the CEO of this search engine Yippie or something like that, some small startup. He's a full-blown QAnon guy, more open than Bill Mitchell, and he's the CEO of this tech startup. He puts out press releases that, like, legit get passed around on, like, business press release sites for his company and signs it where we one go, whatever the QAnon thing is, I forget, sure. WW. And I'm just like, I cannot believe what I'm sitting here with. But that's – sorry to go off topic there, but it's just like – these are the people who were invited to the White House.
It really is like, you know, there were kind of some people you could imagine being there, like Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA was there. You know, again, James O'Keefe was there. But I mean, it was also just some people that you really, it was really like Bill Mitchell, for example. It was really stunning to see him being invited as sort of like one of the great minds of the conservative internet.
Now, I want to bring up two more specific people to talk about. And one of them we haven't really talked about much on this show, and the other we've talked about quite a lot. And I know you have a little bit of a history with him as well, because I think pretty much everyone who covers the right has a history with this guy, because he really likes to befriend the right, but then pretend he's not a right-winger.
Oh, okay.
and that's Tim Pool. Probably the most disingenuous, and I'm saying this completely, I hope he's listening. He probably isn't, but I hope he is. The most disingenuous person out there. All these right-wingers we bring up, you know, at least they present themselves as a right-winger. They stand behind what they say and believe, and at the very least, I'll give them that. Tim Pool, to me, is honestly the worst of the worst, because he just refuses to admit he is who he is. And you know what? I guess I'll give him this credit. His followers are dim-witted enough to believe him and think he's a legit, down-the-middle, real journalist type of guy.
Yeah, you know, I would say I think some of his followers maybe aren't so familiar with politics. He certainly has a kind of a way that I think gets a lot of new people involved and interested. And then essentially he's one of these intellectual dark web guys like Jordan Peterson, like Dave Rubin, who their whole deal is they're clearly right wing, but they know that there's a whole, especially among young people, that that's a bad brand. So instead, you're going to be like, oh, I'm a classical liberal, or, you know, I'm a Democrat, but I became an independent because, like, the SJWs are just out of control, and your whole bread and butter is going to be like picking out individual camp is outrageous. So in the case of Tim Pool, yeah, famously he's this guy who, like, he was in Occupy, but now he's so, like, fed up with Democrats. And so I tweeted about him before the social media summit that he was coming, and I called him right wing, which I think, you know, in terms of, first of all, like, a lot of people follow me on Twitter, I'm familiar with who Tim Pool is. And, you know, again, this is kind of like in the same way that Carpe Donctum wants to be called by his screen name. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend that that's really his name. In the same way, Tim Pool wants people to do this dance that he's this, you know, like the one honest man in America, you know, and he has no political affiliation, and that his audience is not entirely right wing. And so I called him right wing, and he, of course, by the way, has blocked me ages ago and is tweeting about me from behind a block. So he sends all his fans at me, and, you know, they're just like, Tim Pool, right wing? I don't think so. And then, you know, there's this famous picture of him having lunch with all these white nationalists. And, you know, I'd like to add,
there's more than one picture of that out there.
Yes. I mean, all he does, you know, he has all these people on all the time. He makes these really credulous stories, whether it's about the Proud Boys or, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's these guys who essentially are able to get away with this stuff because whenever anyone says it's obviously ridiculous. And I was just describing him accurately. I wasn't like, you know, hey, Tim Pool, like, why are you lying, you know? But, you know, because as soon as someone says the accurate thing about them, they'll send their, like, legions of fans after you. And, you know, this is why it's critical to have your Twitter where you only see replies from people who follow you. Because he ratioed me pretty good, but I really had no idea about it till the next day. And I was like, oh, there's all his fans.
Right. It's weird to me that there's so many people out there, both you know, with mainstream, large media outlets and independent journalists, you know, doing their own thing even, who are able to cover the right without being mistaken for being of the right. Isn't that weird, Will? Like, what? Poor Tim Pool. How did he end up as the one guy who's been mistaken as a right winger? It's just bizarre to me. But I want to bring something up about Tim, because I, seeing the whole Carpe Donctum thing go on, I wanted to know what Tim Pool's opinion about this was. Because I remember Tim Pool starting a legit, I thought it was a good conversation actually, legit conversation back in the Occupy days, before he came out as a full-blown right winger, about what a journalist's role is at these sort of rallies and protests and events, because he would get into spats with Occupy Wall Street protesters, Antifa members, because they would be doing things at these events and he would catch them on camera and they would have a problem with that. So there became a conversation about what a journalist's role is. And Tim would say, you know, it's my job to capture what's going on. If their identity gets caught on camera, that's not my problem, because they're in public doing this thing. And, you know, I actually agreed with him with that. That if you're there in public doing something, and, you know, if you're covered and they don't, you know, that's one thing. But if you're not and they catch you on camera, what could you do? It's their footage. You were caught in public. That's the deal. But his view seems to have changed when it comes to someone like Carpe Donctum. This guy, this very public figure who went to the White House, full view, everyone can see who he is, he deserves his anonymity.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's a very similar comparison we see right now with Andy Nguo, the sort of right-wing Quillette writer who was attacked in Portland. Obviously, I wouldn't support violence against him or anyone. But, you know, you have, on one hand, you have Antifa people saying, don't film us. And again, I tend more towards the view that if you're out in public, you're going to get filmed. But on the other hand, these are the same people who treat, you know, knowing someone's name in public, you know, someone who's participating in the public sphere, the idea that knowing their name would be this big travesty.
Right, right. And the thing with Andy, though, from what I understand from people who are there, he wasn't just, like, Tim, at least from what I remember under the Occupy days, we just happened to catch people just from his catching footage with his camera. Andy, from what I understand, was literally getting up in people's faces, going well beyond what a legitimate journalistic endeavor would include doing. Like, you wouldn't try to lower their mask or get under their hood to capture their face. If they just so happened to get caught, they would just so happen to get caught.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, this is kind of a sort of, you know, a sort of quote-unquote journalism we're seeing a lot on the right. which is sort of like basically getting as close to Antifa as you can and you know, baiting them or, you know, trying to make these counter protesters look ridiculous. We just had an event in DC where, you know, there were a lot of people who would jump over and then, you know, maybe they get a water bottle thrown at them. And I mean, that's essentially what they're going for in the first place. But, you know, I don't mean to get us off track here, but it is an interesting sort of little internet career that has come into existence.
Now, one other person I want to bring up who went to this social media summit is this guy, Ali Akbar.
Yeah.
And he has rose to prominence in recent days as, and you've probably seen this a lot out there, where the Kamala Harris isn't really black meme came from Russia. It was Russian trolls. But that's not true, because it's this guy who started spreading that stuff after the debate.
Right. That's exactly right. I think there's, as you mentioned, I think especially after 2016, I think people, especially on the left, can be a little knee jerk about, assuming that anything bad on the internet is Russian trolls. And unfortunately, the reality is a lot of bad stuff on the internet is our own fellow citizens. So, yeah, in this case, Ali Akbar, you're right. So this guy's kind of a longtime conservative operative, if you wanted to call him a rat fucker, you know, in terms of the Roger Stone school. This is a guy who, for example, down in Florida in 2018 was a big one of these Stop the Steal people who, you know, very reminiscent, of course, of the 2000 recount. So originally, his name is Ali Akbar. He's a guy who identifies as both black and Arab American. But he changed his name. This is the thing. He changed his name to Ali Alexander relatively recently. He claims it's because of some family issues. Notably, it covers up some rather serious criminal convictions that were under Ali Akbar that he was previously known for in the GOP. But whatever the case. So during the debate, he tweets, you know, Kamala Harris isn't an American black, as he puts it, because her father was from Jamaica and her mother was from India, despite the fact, of course, that she was unquestionably born in America. And, you know, it's obviously like an absurdly reductive view of race to say that only, descendants of enslaved people, you know, African-Americans who've been here for centuries, that they're the only ones who face racial discrimination. You know, he makes this claim, and of course, all his, you know, his white buddies, you know, on the right run with it. Don Jr. tweets, you know, how can this be? You know, is this true? And so he eventually deletes that. But I mean, you know, I think it's a sign of the power. We're more than a year out from 2020, November, that these kind of like little like schemes are having, you know, in terms of these smear campaigns. I mean, it's basically like kind of birtherism 2.0.
Now, to bring this full circle now, this guy is the one who went out to, Laura Loomer, and who is that kid who got,
Jacob Wall.
Jacob Wall went to Ilhan Omar's home district to film that documentary where they claim they had the smoking gun that she indeed did marry her brother. Now, this documentary came out months and months ago. It has since been removed from all over the internet because, of course, there was no smoking gun. But on top of that, can you remind us what happened with Jacob Wall in that documentary, which would, force their hand on trying to remove any and all evidence that this documentary ever existed?
Exactly. So essentially what happened was, sorry, Matt, my cat's making a little noise here.
Don't worry about it. I got a cat too. I'm sure he'll bother me at some point.
One moment. essentially what happened was they were chasing this kind of still this like internet rumor, this smear that's been around forever. And so their scheme was they're going to go to Minneapolis and prove it. And the thing to understand about the atmosphere here is they're acting like Minneapolis is this like war-torn, you know, place, because they're like, you know, we have to roll with security guards. Like, people might, you know, armored cars, people might come and pop us at any moment. And so
I just have to interrupt you for one second and just bring up, like, it's the same grift with all these people. We were just talking about Tim Pool, who rose to fame when he went to no-go zones in Europe to prove that they were so dangerous to go to. And then he went, and no matter how much he tried to show that there was some sort of shadowy danger lurking in the European alleyways or whatever, people were just living their daily lives really unbothered by their just normal life for them. Nothing bad, nothing crazy.
Right, and in both cases, you know, there's a fundraising component, right?
Right.
And so it's like, send Tim Pool to the no-go zones, or in this case, you know, we're just constantly, our lives are at risk as we're trying to unravel this kind of like national treasure-like mystery. We just need this document. And so as it turns out, all they find, they produce this video and they're like, here we go, folks, here it is. And it's just them going around Minneapolis, and they go to Ilhan Omar's district, and there's just a guy, they're like, what do you think of Ilhan Omar? And he's like, eh, she's all right. And they're like, we got it. And then they'll say, hey, do you think she married her brother? And someone will be like, I've heard that before. And they're just like, folks, that's all you need to know. But, you know, there's kind of a funny denouement here, which is that during the video, they claim that they've been receiving all these death threats for their, like, truth seeking. And then a little bit after that, Jacob Wohl gets kicked off of Twitter for operating fake accounts. And one of those fake accounts is one of the accounts that made the fake death threats.
That you could see in the documentary. Like, he literally shows his phone.
Even after he got busted.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're right. The documentary comes out after essentially journalists know what these fake accounts are. And so then he essentially reported these fake death threats to Minneapolis police, which is a crime. Now, he hasn't been charged with anything, but, you know, it is certainly kind of gives you the level of competence we're operating with a lot of these characters.
My favorite part of the documentary, if you could find it, I'm sure it's somewhere out there, but if you could find it.
Well, they've actually put it back up. It
oh, was they have.
They were using they were using music they didn't have a copyright to. And so the person was copy striking that.
So there's this great part in it, my favorite, is super dramatic music is playing in the background. Laura Loomer walks up to the steps of Ilhan Omar's home.
Yeah.
She knocks on the door. The music gets really, like, edge of your seat type, like, music. There's a crescendo. I think any moment that door's going to open. It lasts a little bit too long. We're just staying a little bit too long on Laura Loomer. Maybe, though, it's going to pay off. She turns around and goes, I guess nobody's home. And that's the end of that scene.
Well, I mean, that's one of those things that sort of treated as, like, proof that there's, like, a big cover-up, right? Because why wouldn't someone be home at noon in the middle of, like, a Tuesday?
Right.
You know, like Ilhan Omar, it's like she's hiding from us.
Didn't they even, I can't remember, and it doesn't even matter, but it just adds to the hilarity of it all. Didn't they even go when, like, she was in D.C.? Like, she wasn't even going
to
be...
Yeah, she wasn't even there, because their whole plan was to get her to sign an affidavit saying she never married her brother. And so, of course, like, I mean, first of all, how offensive, but, you know, it's like when people are like, do you guys like Al-Qaeda?
Right.
Or... Additionally, obviously, Jacob Wohl has no way to enforce an affidavit.
Right.
So this whole idea. So then, yeah, as you mentioned, they went to her house. There was this other scene where they went to her office and her district office, and they were like, the door is locked. What the heck? And it's like, well, try the one down the hall.
Oh, man. So you mentioned before that Ben Garrison was uninvited. Now, yes. How is he handling that? How is he? Because it was which was the cartoon again exactly? It was a George Soros one, right? That got him.
Yeah, so it's George Soros is controlling David Petraeus. It must have been a reference to something that I don't think we can, you know, some particular incident. It was David Petraeus and another general, and then like a puppet. And then above Soros is the Rothschild family, and I think that's what really puts it over into anti-Semitism. Yeah.
So that is he over it, or has he?
Yeah. So.
Because he put out, right before the summit, he put out this cartoon, basically, showcasing the summit. So it's what an extra slap in the face for him to not get to go.
Right, so he has this cartoon where, like a liberal's in bed, and he's got, like, a pussy hat on. You know, you can imagine the scene. And he's looking so scared, and, you know, it's like Carpe Donctum's a ghost going, like, and the important thing to note about this is this, that the cartoon initially came out, like, months ago. So this was especially when people like, who the heck are, you know, all these people named like soul memes and stuff, and like Mad Liberals is behind the bed. So I mean, the whole thing with Ben Garrison is that he's like, you know, if you talk about Bill Mitchell being a super fan, I mean, this is a guy who, when he draws Trump, it's like the fittest guy. He's like the mountain, right? He's huge, he's ripped, he's super handsome. And then, you know, Ben Garrison gets disinvited. And so you would think this would be a really disappointing moment for him because, you know, Trump essentially has cut bait. But as it turns out, you know, he, of course, just blames the White House staff, as so often happens when something in the administration happens that his supporters don't like. And he goes, you know, like, Trump, I'm sticking with Trump.
The poor president of the United States just doesn't have the power to invite a cartoonist to the White House. The poor guy.
There was also the way this was spun was, you know, it was that darn fake news that was up to no good.
Right. Of course. Now, one thing, and you brought it up with the cartoon, one of my favorite things about conservatives is those who are extremely online conservatives, is that, you know, the inside jokes and the inside references, they don't realize they're in a bubble. It's so funny to me whenever I see this stuff. Like, for example, like with video game streamers on Twitch or anime fans or any other really like insular type of community where only other people in that community will get the references, they don't really need to speak to those outside the community. Like, it's okay. Like, they're able to make their money and spread far and wide and do their thing within that bubble. But in politics, you can't. It doesn't work that way. And, you know, that doesn't really exist, in my view, in any other ideology but this weird, bizarre, far-right online world where they'll bring up these references and names. I've even seen them do it on, like, in shows. I don't know about, you know, if they've made it to cable news, but, like, I'll see this on, like, the Ben Shapiro Show or Dave Rubin or Joe Rogan, and it's like, you realize nobody knows what you're talking about.
You know, I mean, obviously there's, you know, there's going to be like inside jokes and like references in any sort of thing. I mean, obviously, you know, you could imagine lefty podcast people being like, you know, LOL, Trump really corncob today or something. Right. But on the other hand, I think you're right that it is notable how widespread it is on the right. And I mean, like, certainly no one on MSNBC is saying that. Whereas if you turn on Fox News, you know, they're talking about pajama boys. They're talking about these like really obscure, like 10-year-old references. You know, I think all the time about how often they make a reference to Obama in 57 states, which is famously in like 2008. He had a gaffe and he said there were 57 states instead of 50 states. Well, like that's now, nearly 12 years ago. And they're still, they'll just be like, Obama, like that fool, you know. And of course, if you're, you know, coming to this even 10 years later, you're like, what the heck are these people talking about? You know, I was watching Hannity last night because supposedly he was going to have the Bagel Boss guy on.
Oh, right.
And so I totally got fooled into watching it. And so, I mean, it's just crazy how he goes, like, for example, he's talking about this Trump racism stuff. And he goes, well, like, remember Jeremiah Wright? You know, I mean, they just kind of bring this stuff up over and over.
Was the Bagel Boss guy not on the show?
No, he got bagel bumped.
Did he really get bumped, or they just never, or was it all just a ploy to get people to watch?
So I sent a very strange email today to Fox News PR that said, was Sean Hannity kidding about having the bagel guy on, or was he bumped? Like, is this real? And they haven't gotten back to me, so, you know, we'll see.
Oh, man, that's... There is an overlap there, though. They're smart for reaching out to him, because clearly the guy's going to become a conservative star if he wants to. I mean,
well, yeah, this is like a big interest of mine is pursuing, maybe not a big interest, but it's kind of like the right wing career of the Bagel Boss, because, you know, obviously he's been a hit with incels online because, you know, he's mad about women. He feels that he's discriminated against because of his height, whatever. But then the idea that someone like Sean Hannity would want anything to do with this guy who, even though he has right wing views, is clearly like reprehensible. But, you know, right, he's still kind of like inching his way in.
Right. It's going to be weird to see if he actually does, because I think this might be like, because that video went so mainstream. It wasn't just like about his views. It was like just a viral video about a crazy guy going insane.
Right. It wasn't like MAGA hat guy gets his hat stolen.
Right. Right. Like there was something very political about it, and there was something very apolitical about it. And it'll be interesting to see where he takes it. And if the people who watched it and got a laugh out of it will find out about where he goes with it and whether he could possibly even, I don't know, there's probably people who are apolitical who felt for the guy and might be brought into this right-wing well, world by
if you refashion it as sort of like you know, I was publicly shamed, you know, one of these kind of things. It's like I'm a victim of the fake news media.
Right. Now, Will, I don't want to hold you for too much longer. I really appreciate you taking the time with us today. But if you could just for really short, like maybe like 2 minutes, you wrote this great article just today about this face app going around.
Right. Okay. So yeah, face app. Yeah. This is the thing that everyone on social media is doing where it makes you look old. Now, this was a thing in the past, but now it's back and it looks a lot better. And so whenever one of these things happens, there's kind of this like, you know, is this a Russian plot about anything? And in fairness, this company is owned by a Russian company. But, you know, there was a lot of, like, panic all of a sudden about FaceApp after, like, Shaq and everyone had done it, that, like, Russia was either going to use this to, like, make fake American social media profiles or, you know, that, you know, people were claiming that it would spy on you through your phone, all this stuff. I mean, social media, you know, some security experts looked at it. They said it's you know, it's terrible for your privacy, but, like, also literally every other app is. You know, whenever this happens, people will look at the terms of service and they'll be like, holy smokes, these people can do whatever they want. But, you know, I mean, it's like that with Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or anything.
Right. It's stunning to see you just throw the Russia word out there and all of a sudden the DNC is telling candidates not to use it. And if any of their campaign staff have it on their phone, to delete it immediately. It's
right.
Like,
the New York Post, their headline was, because there was this theory that the app was just hoovering up all the photos on your phone rather than one you would upload. And so the headline was like, Russians have all your photos now. I mean, it's just like the most breathless stuff.
But what makes it crazier to me, it's like you see them describe it and you see the reactions like, don't use the app, delete it off your phone. And it's like you're literally describing like what Facebook did with Cambridge Analytica. And right. no one sent mass emails saying delete Facebook off your phone immediately. It's like you said, you know, it's. You know, U.S. companies do this, but apparently when they do it, it's okay in the view of Americans. And
right. I mean, it really is sort of Russia being bandied about as, you know, again, like any company could use this stuff for nefarious purposes and use so many other free things, free apps that we download.
Will Sommer of Tech Reporter, excuse me, for the Daily Beast. Where can we... WriteRichter.com still brings you to...
WriteRichter.com, that's my newsletter on conservative media. If you liked what we talked about today, there's plenty more of that. I'm on Twitter, Will Sommer, WILLSOMMER, and TheDailyBeast.com.
Will, always a pleasure. I think it's been, like you mentioned before we went live, almost a year since you came on. That cannot happen again.
All right, sounds good.
All right, take care, man. Thanks a lot for joining us. Have a good night. All right, ladies and gentlemen. We will now go to the second half of the show, where we will discuss... Bloop, bloop, I love when the Skype thing goes off. We will discuss... well, first off, you can support the show by going to patreon.com/mattbinder. If you enjoyed what you heard today, if you enjoyed any of the previous episodes, if you like what you're hearing and want to hear more, support the show. Again, this is the free part of the show. Everyone gets this, regardless of whether you can afford to donate via Patreon or not. But while we give you bonuses for being a Patreon subscriber, if people don't become Patreon subscribers, eventually even the free show wouldn't exist. Because this show is bankrolled by those literal angels who fund this program. And those people... And you can be named here, too, if you go to patreon.com/mattbinder and donate a monthly. I ask for $5 a month. You can give more. You can give less. As of right now, maybe in the future, it'll change. I'll have tiers. But as of right now, no matter how much you give, you get the same stuff. But I ask for $5 if you can afford it. Patreon.com/mattbinder. These are the folks who make it all possible. Abigail T. Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew H, Benji the Bun Warrior, I think. It always gets cut off and I can't see it. Bobby M, Brooke H, Champagne Kami, Chai, or Chi, I forget which it was, I'm sorry. Christine H, Colin R, Dakota R, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, Dragon Slayer, Floaties, Froz K, Francis Z, FTW All Day, Greg D, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jonathan B, Joseph R, Katie S, Katz, Kyle, Lisa D, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Nam Danette, Romina O, Ryan Left His Best, Scott R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Will P, Wudoplan, or I'm sorry, I misread that completely, Wutopian, and Zarin. Jeez, excuse me. Also, if you're watching the YouTube live stream right now, we are restreaming on Periscope, YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. But if you're watching on YouTube right now, youtube.com/MattBinder, you should first of all subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'd really like to grow the YouTube channel more. youtube.com/MattBinder if you're there right now and want to give a one-time, one-off donation, you can send a super chat. You can give whatever you want. I believe someone just donated, Champagne Commie just sent me 99 cents. Every little bit helps. That 99 cents bought me this show's Coca-Cola. You can do that as well. You can also go to doomedpod.com if you're more of an audiophile. If you don't have time to watch the live stream or catch the replay of the video version of this show, most people don't actually. Most people listen to the podcast. You can go to doomedpod.com, listen right there on the page, or go there and click the iTunes link, click the Google Play link, and subscribe. Also, if you go to iTunes, leave a review. You can give just a 5-star review, or also, well, you can give a 5-star review if you think it's worthy of 5 stars, but you can just give a star review, or also write me a text review. That way people can read about what you think of this show and not just see a bunch of stars. Folks, I don't know what to talk about now, because there's so much to talk about. I want to go to the second half, but I really want to talk about what happened with the squad. AOC, Ilhan Omar, Presley, and Talib. It's stunning to me where... you know what? Let's go to the second half. Let's tease this out here so people will have to become subscribers if they want to know. So in the better half, what am I on the majority report? In the second half, we'll take your questions, your comments, and we will talk about what the four young, progressive, freshman Democrat congresswomen, women of color, have been up against between Trump and their own party. And you know what? That's in reverse, because it is their own party who set this all off. Thanks for tuning in today. Patreon.com/MattBinder. YouTube.com/MattBinder. Stick around for the patron-only portion of the show. Everyone else, see you all next time on Doomed.